This is a recording from JABA. On October 19th, 2007, the organization hosted a one-day conference called Crafting Intentional Communities, Cooperative Living Along Life's Journey. The event was designed to explore new housing and living innovations for seniors to live, grow, and age in community. This is the fifth in a series of podcasts from the event. This is a panel discussion called Innovations for Aging in Community and is moderated by Gordon Walker of JABA.
My name is Gordon Walker, and I'm with JABA, and I've been asked to try to substitute for Drew, which I know I can't do, and I know most people would prefer to have Drew here rather than me, but I'm going to step in and do the best job I can moderating this session. Thankfully, I know all three of these people very well, have a lot of respect for what they do and what they're going to be saying. The intent is to be able to show that there are activities, initiatives underway within our Charlottesville community to better enable people to age within community slash in place. I think you need to do both simultaneously. So when we go about thinking about intentional communities, we recognize that there's a lot of elasticity in the types of projects that can come forward to better enable people to age, and particularly from the perspective that aging is a lifespan event, that it just doesn't start occurring at a certain age. So what we're going to be talking about is both activities that have an intergenerational focus that are applicable for people of any age, as well as initiatives that are directed towards people above a certain age. So with that, I'm going to I don't know which one of the three of you has agreed to start first. Are you going first, John? Okay. And John, you'll do a much better job describing the work you do, both through the university. And the beauty of John's work is it really has a community focus. He really does walk the talk in trying to enable the resources of the university to come into play within our community, and I want to thank him for that. So with that, if you wouldn't mind going
forward.
Thank
you, Gordon. Yeah. I'm here. I teach in the School of Architecture. My name is John Qualley. I teach in the School of Architecture at UVA, and one of the things that I do is I direct what's called the EcoMod project at UVA, which is a project that we do in partnership with Piedmont Housing Alliance, represented today by Mark Watson, if you could wave right there. He's our client for this project. We do a series of prototypical modular homes that have a heavy emphasis on rigorous guidelines for sustainability, looking very carefully at the true environmental impact of the home, as well as focused on affordability. And, of course, the challenge with affordability is what's affordable, how do we define that, and we can get into that. Probably that's already been some of the conversation that's been going on today. I've got a couple slides I want to show you because I'm sorry, you know, as an architect I have to show pictures. I can't just wave my hands. Just to clarify, this is a project that the design and the construction is done by teams of architecture, landscape architecture, and engineering students, both graduate and undergraduate students. The project is in partnership with the School of Engineering and Applied Science at the university, and the engineering students in particular look at some of the civil engineering issues as well as the monitoring issues that we want to get into. We try to be very careful about monitoring the homes, really looking at the performance of the homes to understand what we can from them and use that information in the next iteration. The reason why it's relevant for today's conversation is that a couple of years ago, Gordon came to have a conversation with us at the School of Architecture talking about the issues that JABA is concerned with and how maybe the School of Architecture could be more involved in that. And one of the things he kind of threw out there as kind of a half a phrase is maybe the next EcoMod house could be one for aging in place. And of course, that it was an idea that we had kind of thought about, but you know, being prompted by Gordon, and it led to a pretty serious commitment to that. And PHA agreed to it immediately. PHA works very closely with JABA, and so it wasn't a huge leap for them at all. And so really it was more of a leap for me because I'm not as familiar with issues of aging in place and what that means and what the impacts are in terms of design. And so that meant that it was a leap for my students as well, which is an even more abstract thing for them because, you know, they're somewhere between 20 and probably my oldest student is probably 27 or 28 or something like that among the graduate students. So I'm just going to show some really quick pictures. I'm not going to spend time to try to talk about them all because there frankly isn't enough time. We've all got to 10 minutes here, and I want to go through quickly through this. But to make it even more complicated, one of the things we started to do with this project, as opposed to previous ones, was take on the issue of historic preservation. We were challenged to do this by Piedmont Housing Alliance, let's say. I think that's the gracious way of saying that. They were challenged to take on this issue in an unexpected way. They kind of ended up with this home that turns out that has historic designation and needed to be saved. So in addition to doing our newly built modular construction, we had to take on this challenge of also trying to save a home that turns out that it was a pretty interesting home with a pretty interesting history. We don't have time to go into that history except very briefly to say that it is a home that's an antebellum home. We believe it was built as a slave quarters. If not, at a minimum, the first owner was a freed slave. The documentation is a little fuzzy, and there's contradictory evidence between the paper evidence that we can find and the building itself. So we've working with architectural historians and historic preservationists to help interpret this building and make sure that what we do to it is appropriate and basically just keep the thing from falling down. I mean, it was really, really bad shape. So PHA has had to take on a huge kind of additional financial, you know, commitment here to bring this thing, just to keep it from falling down and turning it into another affordable home, which is a big challenge when you think about the budget issues associated with it. So there's the house as it initially was. There's a rendering of what it was supposed to look like as the designs initially developed. And at the back on the left, you see two green roofs that are modular boxes that the students designed that are now sitting in that backyard. You can't see them as well in this picture, unfortunately. But this is probably about a month ago after the historic house was set in place. I just want to go back real quick because look at the difference there. Our contractor who did the historic preservation, basically the students didn't deal with much of the construction for the historic preservation at all. A guy named Bruce Guss from Housewright is an amazing guy and really, really did a wonderful job. So I'm going to go quickly through, but this is a section through that historic house and what we're doing with it. And ultimately what this led to in both in terms of the historic preservation and in terms of the new construction was some consideration for, well, what does it mean to age in place? And how can we design these two separate housing units, a front unit with the historic house and a modular bedroom addition on the back of it to make it a two-bedroom unit, and a rear unit, which is essentially a studio apartment. And they will be the historic house with the bedroom addition will be sold probably at the very top end of what's technically called affordable housing in Charlottesville, given all the costs associated with this project. And the rear unit will be leased through PHA with some of the financial benefit of that rent going to the homeowners for the overall house. And so, you know, when we kind of took this thing on, well, you know, the more we got into it, the more research we did, we realized that, you know, from an architectural point of view, other than issues of accessibility, which are really important, there's not much different that you really want to make a house that's for aging in place in a strict architectural terms, right? Because an aging population is as diverse as the rest of the population. So you, without knowing the client, without knowing exactly what those individual preferences are, you can't just say, well, we should do this because they're going to prefer that because they're older. Well, that's crazy. Everyone's individuals. And so ultimately, the real agenda we took on related to this issue was to take on accessibility but integrate it in a very seamless way into the design. So it doesn't look like it's a nursing home. So it doesn't look like it's a house that's been renovated to allow people who are who have issues of mobility that have gone in and had to attach, you know, specific things. It's really thoughtfully integrated so that you might not even really notice it unless you go in the bathroom and notice the grab bar. And even that, our strategy for that, which isn't fully implemented yet, is a little bit different. So it doesn't look like a conventional grab bar. And all these kinds of things are you know, it's challenging and it's fun, but it does, I think, challenge the students to recognize that that they have to think synthetically through these issues and not be trying to make assumptions about who people are and what they might want. And so the modular pieces come in different ways, and this whole system could be applied in many different ways, attached to existing houses or put on land independently from an existing house. And the whole idea of the seam is that there's this kind of wrapper piece that has cabinetry stuck into it that kind of seams together the two modules in that rear unit. And there's a section through that rear unit. We do have a green roof on both the rear unit and on the addition bedroom to the historic house. Ours is a little bit different. We have a pod-based or modular green roof, which basically means it's in plastic trays, so if there's any problem with the roof, those trays can be removed individually than having to take off the entire roof. I don't have good pictures. These are the only pictures I actually have of the interiors, ironically. I should have included more, but I didn't include that here. But that's some of the late stages of construction and the installation of this cabinetry seam that the students are doing. There's our green roof. We are thinking very carefully about whatever renewable energy strategies that we can actually afford with affordable housing, and some of that is supplemented by grant funding that we've received. And one of them is an evacuated solar hot water tube system, which is an even more energy efficient solar hot water system than the conventional. And the conventional ones are pretty efficient to begin with. So we're very excited about that installation. We also have had conversations with the Medical Automation Research Center at UVA. They develop non-invasive medical monitoring devices, and they have now recently commercialized those devices. And so our plan is once the homeowner and or the renter for the rear unit gets selected, to work with them and select appropriate non-invasive medical monitoring devices to install in there, and the homeowner or the renter will have the opportunity to use those things at no cost to them in terms of the installation of the acquisition of the equipment, and at no cost to PHA either. And it's a pretty interesting technology. You don't have time really too much to go into it, but it basically involves heart rate and breathing monitoring integrated into the mattress of a bed, and motion sensors and variety of things like that, as well as one of the engineering students made up their own wireless pulse oximeter as just a kind of a fun thing. So we build these things ourselves. We bring them as modules into town. We bring them onto site. There's the historic house. Had to get lifted up and get an entirely new foundation. You can imagine the costs associated with that. And somehow Mark Watson hasn't completely lost all his hair. He's been pulling it out all the way through. Hold on to that hair. And he's been very patient all the way through this process. There we are in late stages of interior construction in that historic house. There's the different phases of some of the construction there. And there we are out at the Milton Airport, where we build the modules off-site and then bring them into town. Milton Airport is owned by UVA, and we've turned that into our fabrication facility. It's our own little mini modular plant, the idea being that we want to do these things as if they really are built in a conventional factory, because that makes it easier for us to license these designs. And we've already licensed the first two designs in this project, which I'm not showing today, but we will be licensing this one as well. There's the modules going into place, or at least one of the modules going into place on that site, and we do a lot of evaluation of this. As I've mentioned, we also look at part of the evaluation is the affordability analysis, and ultimately right now we're working towards developing a wireless monitoring system that not only would be used for this home, but also could be a commercialized product that affordable housing providers across the country could purchase in. And there's our website, and there we go. I think that's my turn.
Excellent job, John. What I ask is that people hold off on their questions until all three finish their presentation. Next is Frank Stoner with Stonehouse Development. I know Frank's not going to be talking about a project that we did in partnership with them, but I just want to underscore JABA's relationship with Stonehouse. It goes back to 2001, when there was a 118-bed now assisted living facility out in Crozet, and it had filed Chapter 11. It was owned by a national corporation, and 90% of the people there had incomes under $12,000, and there was no way they were going to be able to find alternative places to live anywhere within 200 to 250-mile radius of Charlottesville. And working with Stonehouse, we figured out a way to buy the building. We're the operator. It's a really good arrangement. And so I say this to, one, give credit for their company wanting to work with us to keep that building afloat and provide affordable assisted living, But oftentimes developers don't get that recognition. At least here's one that really was able to work with us to make certain that people could continue to age in place within community within the community of Crozet. So I want to thank them for that.
Thank you, Gordon. I thought I'd take just a couple minutes to tell you a little bit about our company and then speak to a couple projects that we're currently that are actually currently under construction, which illustrate, I think, some of the challenges and hopefully successes that we hope to achieve in the cause of building intentional communities that are really more market-driven. So Stonehouse was formed in about 2000, and we had a fairly simple mission. It was we want to do infill development, and we want to be socially and economically and environmentally responsible. And that worked well for a few years, and we did a few small infill projects in and around the city and had done some smaller subdivision projects that are in the urban growth area. And then about a year ago, we went away as a company, and we started to rethink our mission, and we came up with sort of a bolder vision for the company. And it was to enhance lives by creating great places. And that's a pretty broad statement to make. We have a set of core values that we adhere to in every project that we do. And most importantly, I think, for us, is sort of a legacy of stewardship in each and all of the projects we do, so that 15 or 20 or 50 or 100 years from now, you won't look back at these projects and say, what a terrible thing happened in this particular location. I'm sorry we let that happen. Or the communities that we build, we want to be communities that can evolve over time, and I think that and ultimately be sustainable. And so in the last couple of years, we've tried to figure out, well, what does that really mean to build great places? And we came up with a scorecard internally, and we now take all our projects through this sort of internal scoring system that rates the project on five or six different variables, from sustainability to sociability to vitality to environmental stewardship. And if we can't get the project to score, you know, it either goes back into pre-development or we sell it. So that's... That's a short way of introducing a couple projects that I'm going to tell you about that we're working on now. The first one is a large master plan community off of Rio Road in the county of Albemarle, about 2.5 miles from downtown, called Belvedere. It is about a 775 home community. 400 of those homes will be single-family detached. There are about 250 apartments. There are a number of carriage units, which are effectively detached garages that can function as garages or apartments or accessory facilities for families who need the additional space. So they're very flexible. It's got virtually every form of housing available. We have small affordable cottages that are one-level living. We have townhomes. We have condominiums slash apartments. There's a mixed-use town center as part of the project. And it has been a major challenge for us, I think, to figure out how you take a market-driven project like that and incorporate some of the benefits of this kind of intentional model. You know, I was exposed to co-housing for the first time about 9 or 10 years ago when I was contacted by a local group who was trying to figure out how they could put a co-housing project together in the city of Charlottesville. And we owned some property that that was in the city that perhaps was appropriate, and we carried on a dialogue for a number of months trying to figure out, you know, how we could put our two interests together. And through that, I began to learn sort of more about what drives people into these communities, why they are, I think, valuable community assets and began to think about, gee, how could you take those principles and apply them in a more market rate environment? Because I think one of the difficulties of the co-housing model is it's a very close network of people, and getting in and out of one is not necessarily easy. I was most fearful that if I ever applied and actually had to be interviewed, they'd never let me in. So I thought I better figure out a model that perhaps was a little more market-based. And so as we started talking about Belvedere and thinking about those key components of an intentional community, the one that really jumped out at me today was this notion of being productive, as opposed to the sort of consumer model that I think in my business we're most often drawn to. That's the resort-style living, which you see, I think, in various forms around the country in these active adult communities. You can have it all, have the pool, have the tennis courts, have the facilities to live this sort of resort lifestyle. And I think most people at some point find that to be pretty unfulfilling. So in Belvedere, we thought most importantly we needed to find a way to sort of create this connective tissue that would allow seniors to participate in the broader community in a way that was ultimately fulfilling and diverse. And so we're experimenting now with a variety of forms of interactive venues for seniors and children, for example. You know, Gordon pioneered the Montessori senior daycare connection on Hillsdale a number of years ago. And that's a model that sort of appealed to us. And as we began to plan the town center for Belvedere and think about not a clubhouse, which is kind of a traditional suburban model, but sort of town hall, and think about how that facility might be used, one of the uses that jumped out at us immediately was, wow, if we could get senior daycare in here during the day and have it interface with the Montessori school that's going to be next door, that might be a synergistic use and also a wonderful community resource. And so that's something we will continue to pursue. I think Belvedere, most importantly, is a completely walkable community. All the houses that are in it will be Earthcraft certified homes. The community itself is part of a LEED ND program, which is sponsored by the U.S. Green Building Council. So we're practicing a lot of sort of green technologies that have been around for a while but are not necessarily prevalent in our industry today. So that's the first community that I think is noteworthy and offers sort of some unique opportunities, hopefully, to integrate some of this intentional community. The second is a project called Bailey House, which is on the east side of town, and it's a 92-unit senior apartment project located within a market-rate apartment community, very close to the 250 Pantops commercial area. And this project was originally planned as a 410-unit market-rate apartment project, and we developed the first 280 units and then began to think again about, gee, how could we change the model a little bit and find ways to integrate more ages into the same environment, have them enjoy the same resources, give them opportunities to interface so that the senior population didn't feel like they were isolated from the rest of the community. So we're building this 92-unit building. It'll be elevated. It will have a limited number of services. But most importantly, it will enjoy all the features and advantages of the market rate apartment project within which it sits. And it's almost the centerpiece of this project. So So the jury's out as to how that will work and what ways we can better integrate and allow for that interface. But we're excited about the possibilities. And so with that, Gordon, I'll probably turn it back to you. And
okay. Thanks, Frank. I'm going to turn it over to Chris. Chris Murray is business development manager at JABA. I can't say enough good about my association with Chris. He's been at JABA for a year. And his charge is to enable JABA to develop product, much kind of like what John was talking about, that addresses the changes that are going to occur as a result of our community growing older and what type of opportunities that provides a nonprofit organization. And thankfully, Chris came to us with vast, in-depth private sector experience, and it's how you go about combining that. So that's what Chris is going to be talking about. So thanks, Chris.
I come to working with old people by way of children's furniture. Now, go figure. One of the things that we're working on at JABA is a company called My Home for Life, which is to bring services to seniors in their own house to permit them to age in place, if you will. But before I go into the details of that, I'd just like to focus for a moment on this whole notion of aging in place, and to emphasize something that Zev said earlier, and that is that aging in place, which seems to be nirvana for all of us, is actually the reaction to a negative. That is, what's the alternative? The alternative, as we know it, as has been presented to us by the market for the past 25 years, is basically a modern old person's home. And who wouldn't want to age in place if that's the alternative? So the alternative really is institutions, and the problem with institutions is that they're based on a medical model. And to pick up on something that Drew said is that it's not only a medical model, but it's a sort of one hand clapping in the social realm, is that we are there with caregivers. There's no, we are takers. We, as seniors in an assisted living facility, are takers. We don't have a chance to give. So the notion of being able to age, so the point would be, what's the alternative? And that is to basically stay at home and to age in community, age in the neighborhood that you know already. We are hardwired to be in community. And so what we want for all of us as we age is to be able to stay in our neighborhood. What we want really more than anything is options for all of the options that we have in the houses that we have, the neighborhoods we have. And JABA's mission actually is to help people to age really wherever they are, financially, socially, spiritually, in every way. And so the business that we're forming, My Home for Life, is based on the Paul Newman principle, is that we will produce a very good product, we will make money on it, and that money will circle back to serve our core constituency that can't afford the things that we would like them to have. So there's a dual bottom line with the things the businesses that JABA is doing. But My Home for Life is a subscription-based service where for $15 a month for an individual, $20 a month for a household, you get a single phone call access to a basket of services that JABA has vetted. There's transportation, there's landscaping, home repair, home maintenance, geriatric care management. Much of the early, we don't know what the needs are going to be exactly, but we do know that many of them will be healthcare related. We want to make sure we've got that covered. So we also have house call physicians on board. But these will be, what we want to do is to save you the agony of looking in the yellow pages for what? For a lawnmower. As we were setting this up, I just for laughs went to the yellow pages. Charlottesville's not a huge community. I went to the Charlottesville yellow pages to look for a lawnmower, for someone to do landscaping. There are 43 of them. So if you've broken your hip, you've mowed the lawn for the past 40 years, you now need somebody in 3 weeks to mow your lawn, what do? You go to the yellow pages, there are 43 choices. I mean, and then you've got to make sure that when they show up, they're not going to steal your silver and your old lawnmower. So what we're going to do is we what we want We are selling, if you will, we're selling security and reliability. People who can do the job, we know they can. We'll be doing criminal background checks, for example, on the employees. But the point is that if we can bring services to you in your home, it gives you the option to stay in your home. Maybe not forever, but longer. Another thing that we're working on is to redefine home, or to help this community redefine home. And we're working now with the city of Charlottesville on a feasibility study to look into home sharing, which is a model that comes from Burlington, Vermont, where people literally share a home. Is that if someone has now lost a spouse, two people next door living in a total of 6,000 square feet, why don't sell one house, move in with the other? So we're looking, we will be doing a feasibility study on that, pretty much based on the Burlington model, but the regulatory environment everywhere is different, so that's one of the issues that we will be looking at very hard. And that has, there are two sort of subsets of that. One is basically roommates who have shared needs, and the other is an equity-based solution where you could have people in those 6,000 total square feet sell one, and each of you literally own 1,500 square feet. Or to put it differently, if you have, based on income, if you can afford, you know, $125,000 house, if four people got together, suddenly the four of you have $500,000, which in Charlottesville can now at least buy you a house. So the point of home sharing is to look at other models of how can we age, stay in our neighborhoods as best we can. The other thing we will be looking at as well is accessory dwelling units, which really is the eco-mod model. It's and what Frank is doing as well, and that is infill development. You know, when you have 3/4 of an acre of land, and if it's in town, there's plenty of room to put another dwelling on that acreage, and that dwelling can be used for all sorts of things. It can be housed 10 students. Sorry. It could be used to house a caregiver. It could be used to house children who have come here from Atlanta to live with and care for an aging parent. The parent could move from the large house into the smaller house, and rent the larger house. So looking very hard at laws that would appropriately permit smaller houses in backyards, basically, is something that we'll be looking at as well. And then the last one is, and this is something we've been talking to PHA about, and that is workforce housing. The point of one of the big problems with assisted living is this a place where I want to work? Basically, no. It's a very difficult environment. So if we could bring affordable housing closer to seniors in any way, then you have caregivers who could actually work in the home, or they could exercise other sort of social capital principles where they can just help out their neighbor and so on. So there are many other models for aging in place, if you will, and I think that JABA's intent here is to increase the number of options, because we are all different. We all want something different. So with that, I'll stop.
I'm going to throw it open for questions. The one thing I'm reminded of, though, is that our population of people over the age of 65 is going to double. As we heard earlier this morning, you know, that life expectancy continues to grow. People, thankfully, can, if they practice good behaviors, can live longer, healthier. And what challenges this presents to society as a whole as it presents to communities? And we take a look at this, creates business options, opportunities for younger people to begin to think about how to create better situations for their families, which I know has been one of the spinoffs of some of the initiatives we've done with universities. It's gotten younger people thinking about aging as a business for them to get into. But you know, it's a challenge because no society's ever had to confront this before. This number of people living longer and wanting to be able to remain engaged and active within community.
So it's just exploring these types of options, I think, should be of provide all kinds of new thinking. And we really want Charlottesville area to be recognized as a community, as an incubator where these kinds of ideas can at least be tested and hopefully come to fruition.
One of the important things here, I think, that we the real world forces it on us, but that is that we live in an economic environment that's driven by money, and so that's a reality that we need to face. So there's some I'm thinking, for example, of My Home for Life, that not only does this help seniors to stay in their house, but it also is it can add value, say, to Bailey House, to an apartment building where if you as a senior are moving into an apartment, knowing that as you become more infirm, that those services that can keep you there can come there, that's a real plus to being able to lease the apartments. So there's, as we, as JABA looks at this anyway, you know, there are two bottom lines here. We can do well and do good at the same time.